going to go to the drainage meeting?
First of all, I want to thank you all for coming to the Elk Grove Community Connection SOI Summit 2. We feel this matter is very important in our community, and public outreach is why we do what we do, and having you all come is really important, and thank you for making the time after a three-day weekend to coming out to this summit. My name is Connie Conley, and along with my core group members of the Elk Grove Community Connection, who we all pull this together and do the very best we can for our community, I'd like to introduce Kathy Lee, who will be our timer tonight, Lynn Wheat, who helped with registration, Linda Ford, who is in the back and will be collecting your cards for your question and answers. Okay, now I'm going to introduce our moderator, who is not new to Elk Grove, but has just rejoined us living in the city of Sacramento after being on the East Coast for a while. Danetta was a former longtime resident of Elk Grove. She currently resides in the city of Sacramento, and she will serve as tonight's moderator. Ms. Garcia is owner of D. Garcia Beyond the Tracks Consulting, a public relations firm here in the city of Sacramento. Ms. Garcia was appointed as an advisory member to the Committee on Preparing California for the 21st Century and was recently served as the City of Elk Grove's appointee of Sacramento Human Rights and Fair Housing Commission. Ms. Garcia is also a certified facilitator of the National Issues Forum, and she has moderated many forums, including the League of Women Voters. Now I'm going to turn everything over to Danetta, and she will establish the ground rules, and we'll get with the introductions of our panelists and on to the question and answers. Thank you, everyone.
It is with great pleasure that I am here this evening to join you as you discuss something very important. You have had many discussions at your home, you've had many discussions with your neighbors, and you're going to continue your discussion again here tonight. I should advise that I have not spoken to anyone in the city, whether it be a politician or resident, in regards to your views or where you stand in regards to this issue. I come with no bias. I am here to facilitate your issues with your city. I'm happy to do that. The ground rules are very simple. We are very principled people in the city of Elk Grove, and we are very passionate as well. But that passion, we cannot allow it to get in the way of our discussion. The deliberative discussion this evening will be full of ideas and statements. There will be people who are angered by some of the statements or comments. There will be those of you that are happy and satisfied. We all come to the middle of the road and to a consensus at some time. It is not that you agree, it is that you agree to disagree agreeably while we are here. We have a wonderful opportunity here. I say we because the city of Sacramento is also here joining you to discuss your issues. We have some individuals who are not here at the moment. They are stuck in traffic. Mr. Don Natoli, who is the supervisor of Sacramento County. Terry Shutton, who is the county executive of the County of Sacramento. Paul Hahn, administrator of the Municipal Services Agency. And I don't think Laura Gill has arrived yet. Oh, Laura's in the back, and we do have our wonderful council member, Sophia Sherman, who is also in the back of the room. We want all of you to recognize that although these people are very important, I am pleased to be honored with the presence of the honorable residents of the city of Elk Grove. You are important, and your views and issues are what matter. On our panel, we have distinguished guests as well. They will each be given 2 minutes to give you a brief introduction. Mr. Mike Wynn, Mr. Patrick Hume, who is the mayor of Elk Grove, Mr. Don Hazen, Pat Blacklock, Rob Sherry, Rob Wassmer, is it Wassmer?
Wassmer.
Gary Davis has not joined us yet. Steve Detrick, Council Member Steve Detrick, Rob Burness, Dale Mayon, and Steve Zarnecki. Thank you, gentlemen. At this time, I would like to let you know that what's going to be important is the question on your card.
After they give their introductions, we are going to go immediately into question and answer. If you have a question and you would like to have it read, I will read it from the podium. Please address it on the card and I will read directly from the card your question. If you prefer to stand up, then I will bring the mic to you so you can ask the question. On the back of your little flyers there, you have a C. The C is for clarification. If someone on the panel does not make themselves clear as rain to you, raise that card and we will allow continued discussion of it so it is clear. The panel members also have a yellow card. They may want to weigh in on the answer to your question. Your question may be to Mr. Wynn. However, Mr. Czarnecki may want to weigh in. He will raise that yellow card, which allows him to weigh in the discussion. If they have nothing to add and nothing changes, then they won't raise their card. If everything is clear, you won't raise your C. But know that you will be able to put that C up for clarification, because we don't want anyone to leave here unclear and uncertain of their views and of what you would like to ask them. How does that sound to each of you? I think that will work. Now I would like for our panel members, starting with Mr. Wynn, to give us a 2-minute presentation of who they are and where they've come from and why they're here.
Hello, can you all hear me? My name is Mike Wynn. I'm a resident of El Dorado Hills, but I've been an active home builder and developer in Elk Grove. Before with Elk Grove for 25 years, and particularly during the last 8 years of incorporation. I guess many of you may live in homes that either Windcrest Homes or Lennar Communities or Ryan Bartis had something to do with in the planning or building, from East Elk Grove all the way over to Stone Lake. I love working here. It's one of the more fascinating aspects of my career, and I can't think of a more exciting time in Elk Grove. My background includes city planning as well as development, and the sphere of influence, at least as proposed today, I think allows the city to do on a blank canvas, very methodically, step at a time, what very few cities in California have an opportunity to do, that is create a vision and then put it in reality, a sustainable plan. I don't want to beat that word to death, but a sustainable plan where people can actually live and work in the same city, where the Casumnas Greenbelt and the 340,000 acre habitat plan can frame both the east and the southern edge of the city, and once and for all, the creeping, you know, the boundary changes every 10 years can be ceased. And the city can stop, and with its citizenry, as well as those in the region who have an interest, look and see what it wants to look like when it grows up. I won't ever have a chance like this. I hope I can last. I have to say that of the landowners that I represent, or represented, some of them are no longer in business. I don't have to tell any of you what the economic condition is. So I'll stop now and hand it off to the next speaker.
Thank you.
Good evening, my name is Pat Hume. I am currently the mayor of Elk Grove, but tonight I'll be playing the role of Lightning Rod. So feel free to address things to me. The reason I play that role is because I've been pretty forward and upfront on where I stand on this, and I view this as an opportunity for true long-term planning and true, as was mentioned, to take the build and release pressure of development off and look at what do we want Elk Grove to be finally in the end, and how do we work back from there and then make that line permanent and come back and make everything inside work and build it into the community that we all can be. And then for the part of the land that does not get developed, what do we want that to be used as? Continued agriculture, have recreational amenity components to it, open space, conservation, groundwater. What are the other things that we can think of outside of the box, beyond just annexation means development, SOI means annexation, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I won't take the full 2 minutes because I've said pretty much everything I'm still standing behind. Again, I'm looking at this as a long-term funding opportunity.
Thank you.
And good evening. I'm Don Hazen, the City of Elk Grove Planning Director. And I'd like to begin by thanking Connie Conley and the entire Elk Grove Community Connection for sponsoring this forum. And I can't help but think that our nation's forefathers would be proud of this event tonight. This is precisely what they had in mind, is to create a public forum where all viewpoints can be presented and freely debated. As planning director, I have to ensure that our department, when asked by the city council, can look over the horizon and plan for the future of the city. And that's a very difficult task to do, and one that doesn't necessarily involve scientific formulas. There's just not an art to predicting the future. The SOI is our attempt, I think, at implementing the city council's policy to plan for the ultimate boundaries of the city. And tonight is an excellent forum to listen to your viewpoints, and hopefully we can respond to that. It's not a green light to develop, and there will be much more planning in the years to come. So I look forward to participating in this event tonight.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Pat Blacklock. I'm the Assistant City Manager for the City of Elk Grove, and I want to share with Don the thanks and gratitude for Connie Conley and the Elk Grove Community Connection for hosting tonight's forum. Anytime we have an opportunity to gather together like this and hear your questions, it only helps to inform us and to help us move forward in a more educated way. One thing I want to note is that there will probably be a question or two tonight for which we don't have a definitive answer, or we may need to do a bit more research. And I would encourage you in those cases to send us an email, call us by phone, whatever it takes, because we'd be happy to do that follow-up research. I know today, just today, in fact, we updated the city's website with some additional information following the listening sessions that were held a couple months back. And that's something that we commit to do in the future, is to continue to use that website as a source, as an opportunity to share information as we move forward. So thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Robert Sherry. I'm Sacramento County Planning Director. I guess my role here tonight is really to represent the interests of Sacramento County. Just by way of background, the area that we're talking about for potential inclusion in the sphere of influence is currently all within the unincorporated county. It's all subject to Sacramento County's general plan. Our policy is really, as long as you've had general plans, have been favoring farmland protection, open space protection, and more recently we're partnering with Elk Grove and other jurisdictions on a habitat conservation plan. I think it's important to know that, and I suspect we're going to get into discussion of supporting and opposing the action that we're going to be discussing tonight. And I think Sacramento County's position really doesn't fall into either of those two categories. Our interest is in making sure that as the SOI and whatever form it goes forward, the LAFCO does go forward, that our interests and concerns are properly addressed.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Rob Wassmer. I'm a professor at Sacramento State. I'm glad to see that I'm sitting in the middle, because I think that's the role that I'm going to play. I live in Sacramento, East Sacramento, near the university. I really have no dog in this fight, as they say. I guess I'm here to kind of represent the academic viewpoint, you know, some of the perspective on this. Some of you may hear, it's a famous joke about economists. Harry Truman would bring an economist into his office and ask for advice on a policy question. And you know, the economist would leave and he'd tell his other advisors, you know, I wish I could find a one-handed economist. Because every time they come into my office, they'll tell me, well, on one hand, this may happen, but on the other hand, this may also happen. And I think I'll probably play that role tonight, you know, tell you different perspectives and thinking on this. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, some information and some uncertainties in regard to it. You know, there are both pros and I think there are cons that can be pointed out in regard to this boundary expansions. And a lot of it has to do with, you know, the amount of growth that's going to be occurring in the region, the amount that should be directed towards Elk Grove, and those are issues, you know, that are a bit unsettled, especially in this economic recession where we're going to come out of it. You know, the one thing that's going to probably be mentioned is this blueprint project, you know, that this whole blueprint plan, which we receive national recognition that people are aware of, you know, that, you know, within this plan, this is not planned for, right? The blueprint plan, if you followed it, would not call for this type of expansion. So I'll mention that. You know, you say, well, it's only a very small expansion. Well, it's death by 1,000 cuts. Every local government is thinking about just these very little small expansions, jumping urban service boundaries, trying to do it. And in the end, you know, we go bigger and we sprawl. You know, that's one side. that you can think about. But at the same time, there's something to be said about local control and being able to control your boundary on a city. So I think some of the issues that I'd be glad to address and talk about further. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Councilman Steve Detrick. First, I want to thank the EGCC for not only this forum, but all the other forums they put together, because I used to be on that side where you're sitting, and I know how important that is. Second, I want to thank the diverse panel that we have here tonight, because I think it's tremendous to have a great cross-section to give a fair view of all of this. And then, most of all, the residents of Elk Grove, and then all of our neighbors to Elk Grove that are here tonight. Because everyone, whether you're in the city or out of the city, there's a vested interest there. And whoever's got a vested interest needs to have a seat at the table, so to speak. So I'm glad that you're all here. What I'm looking forward to tonight is hearing more from the citizens, as well as the panelists that we have that we've never had an opportunity to see before, especially to a gentleman like Rob that have such a diverse background that is unbiased, because they don't really have a dog in the fight on this. So I'm really looking forward to that. And then seeing how we can develop and work towards a collaborative goal where everybody finds a place that they're comfortable with. And there's a lot to be determined. We're pretty much in the infancy stage on all this. And again, I just look forward to some really good discussions tonight.
Thank you.
I'm the third Rob on the panel this evening. My name is Robert Ness. I'm here on behalf of the ECOS, Environmental Council of Sacramento, an organization called Habitat 2020, both of which are coalitions of a number of environmental groups in the Sacramento region. And thirdly, on the board of directors of the Stone Lakes National Wildlife Refuge Association, which is one of the areas that would be directly affected by the proposed expansion. In another life also, I have been involved over the last 30 years in planning decisions that have affected Elk Grove for better or worse as a member of the Sacramento County Planning Department, and was involved in the 1993 general plan and the policies associated with it, as well as a number of important land use decisions over the years that have affected Laguna and this previous land that was before the city growth. ECOS was very much involved in the 1993 general plan, and the discussions were very significant about the meeting of the urban policy area and the urban service boundary. We have viewed that boundary as essentially almost a permanent line that should only be moved unless there is a very significant regional need. Well, we don't see that regional need is emerging at this point in time. We think that the issues are much larger, that we need to have a different approach to growth, and we recommend that the Elk Grove put aside their expansion plans for the time being and work on solving some of the unmet regional needs, for example, the lack of water to supply the total growth for the area.
Thank you.
My name is Dale Mann, and I'm honored to be invited to share on the panel tonight to express my views from the perspective of a landowner, a longtime resident of Elk Grove, and I hope I can share what I would like to see happen. I believe in future planning and long-time growth, and I think that now is the time whether or not we are prepared to take any action. From the point of view of a farmer, I think it is our immediate goal to preserve the right of agriculture and sustainable economic agriculture. My family has lived in Elk Grove and farmed and raised cattle in the surrounding community since the early 1850s. We recognize that times change and circumstances change, and we have to change with the condition. But we believe that today we should plan for 20 years ahead, 30 years ahead, we do recognize the problem of water. Water probably is going to be one of the critical factors that's going to determine our ability to continue the farming operations that we have. I'm going to express my thoughts relative to the land that lies east of Highway 99, basically south of Pantline Road and north of the Cosumnes River. That particular area of land has two distinct elements. One is the floodplain, and the other is the upland. The upland is already in the urban service area. It will be developed someday, not in the foreseeable future, either by the county or the city of Elk Grove. The floodland will never be developed. And so I'm going to limit all of my thoughts to that particular area.
Good evening. My name is Steve Zarnicki. I am the executive director of the Elk Grove Economic Development Corporation. And my job is to promote Elk Grove as a good place to do business and to attract jobs and to help retain jobs. I'm the second Steve on the panel today, and unlike the first, I've only been here about 18 months, but I developed over that 18 months a profound appreciation for the community. One of the things that is clear about Elk Grove is that there are a lot of homes and very few jobs. Actually, there's only 0.4 jobs per household in our community. When you compare this to the national average of 1.3 jobs per household, you can see that we need jobs. And part of the SOI process is to manage growth and to look at where we might put the future jobs in relationship to housing in our community. And so I'm delighted to be part of this process. I've been an economic developer for the last 25 years. And glad to be part of this community and glad to be part of this conversation.
Thank you very much. We do appreciate your input. However, those that have reserved opinions for particular areas may be asked a question or two in another area, so be ready to entertain those as well. We do appreciate it. Now I want to get to our most treasured, honored guest, and that's the residents of Elk Grove. It's time for you to ask them those questions. So, what we're going to do is raise our hand. If you have a question you want to write on that card, please raise it up and someone will come by and pick it up. If you would like to stand up, please stand up, and then I will ensure that we get the right person so that you can ask your question. We have 1 minute for their answer. Your question should only take 30 seconds. If it takes a little longer, that's okay. Because what we want to do is to get the question asked and the answers given. Are panel ready for these questions? This question is for anyone. It comes from Joe, is it Darling?
Daling.
I'm sorry, I apologize, couldn't see you. Are you, would you like to stand so we can identify you, the person we're speaking to? This question, he writes, the area south of Grantline is in the urban service boundary up to the high flood line. Who would you prefer to eventually develop this area, the city or the county? Of the panel members, who would like to address that question first? Well, let's go ahead then, and that question will be answered by each of our panel members. We want to know what they think. Mr. Nguyen.
I feel strongly that the city of Elk Grove should plan and determine the land uses in that area, as well as south of Camera Road on the other side of the freeway. Given its capacity to plan, develop, and manage growth, and it's not to disparage anything the county has done, but I think it just makes sense. It's a natural boundary for the city. It's contiguous to existing development in Elk Grove, and it just seems to be the right way to go.
Mr. Blacklock, please.
The city council's policies are pretty clear on this topic. The general plan identified urban study areas south of the city, and this is one of those areas. And so the city has made it clear that local control and the ability to plan for the future within this area is an important component of the SOI application, and that is why it's included with
Mr. Czarnecki.
Well, I agree. I think that the city of Elk Grove should go on that.
We do need a mic for you. The reason that we're going to jump around is because it just is much better. We want to make them think who's next.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the city of Elk Grove should be the one that has the authority to control the property and develop it in the future.
Mr. Hume.
I agree also. I think that beyond who's going to develop the upland, so to speak, there is reasonable association and adjacency to the city of Elk Grove. I think that obviously that makes a lot of sense. Again, nothing against the county of Sacramento, but I think that Elk Grove has to determine what happens around its boundaries in addition to what happens within its city, and I think that the Cosumnes River is the natural extension of that.
Mr. Burness.
I think that there is a portion of the area north of Grantline, adjacent to the urban part of Elk Grove, that is probably appropriate for the city to consider, but not the entire boundary all the way out to the east. I think that a lot of that area should remain rural residential, or at least low-density residential, consistent with the edge of the urban boundary, and I don't think that's an issue that requires necessarily the city to be involved.
Mr. Hazen.
I can't get by saying I agree with everybody. As Pat said, I think the council policy is very clear. From a property owner's perspective, I would think that they're looking for a logical provider of services, and to have properties that are split between county and city makes it very awkward. From an SOI planning standpoint, we typically try to use natural land features and or parcel lines, and so consequently we have a floodplain that is bisecting several parcels, and we just think from a coordination standpoint it helps to have one provider. And the city, of course, is the one that has filed the SOI application, so we think we're in the best position to provide those services.
Mr. Mann?
Yes. Thank you. I agree that the city should be the one who should be in charge of the area south of Grantline Road, and I think there are several reasons for that. One is the floodplain is never going to be developed just because of the physical condition of the water that comes down there, and the cost and thing. But the upland, I think, can be developed, and I think if it is developed in such a manner so as to include the floodplain, or perhaps trails and public access, and preserve the agriculture, it could best be done by the city of Elk Grove. The city of Elk Grove has a special interest in this, also the natural boundary, and if it was to be the natural boundary of the river, and also if it was to be divided between the county and the city, there's a possibility that we would encounter the joint power situation where both the city and the county would be ruling or governing that, and that has caused some difficulty in the past.
Thank you. We have in the middle, we have someone who needs some clarification. Ma'am, if you would go ahead and stand up and come forward to the mic, I would appreciate it. She's going to ask us a question, and we're going to find out what it is and to whom she's directed.
I'm Ruth Gesher Brown. I live in Milton. And this question is for Don Hazen. During the course of the SOI amendment process...
I'm sorry. She forgot the rules. You would need clarification on Mr. Daling's question, and then we will address your question. You're welcome. Please stay right there. Since we don't have clarification on that other question, let's go ahead, please, and if Mr. Wassmer could answer that question. Thank you, dear.
I guess the assumption was made that there will be development on the other side of the urban service boundary. I would begin to even ask whether there should be development on the other side of the urban service boundary, and I think if the county maintains control of it, there's very likely not to be development on the other side. They're more likely to hold that urban service boundary. So I would kind of rephrase the question even to think about it. If there is definitely going to be development on the other side, then I would be in favor probably for the city to undertake that development and have control over it. But overall, I could make an argument why there should not be development in regard to the, you know, the expansion of the urban footprint and for sprawl reasons.
It looks like we have a question for clarification to this question.
What do you mean by the other side? The urban service boundary, I have no idea what you're saying. As I understand, the urban service boundary runs down Grantline Road, down Cameron Road, down Bilby Road.
No.
One moment, please.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Not a problem.
My mistake for being an outsider. Yes. So I retract all that.
Well, that's okay. Because part of the process is information in, information out.
Yes,
good information and information out. We have to do that to be responsible. I appreciate that. You are an honorable man. It takes a lot of guts and glory to say, oops, I made a mistake. And that's what it's all about. Thank you very much. Let's go ahead with Gary Davis, please.
Good evening. Good to see you all. I apologize for being late. Ironically, we're talking about planning for the future in Grove, and I was stuck in traffic on Highway 89. You know, I've said this before, and I still believe it, that, and I believe this answers the question because it was asked before I walked in the room, but I believe that cities are in the business of urbanizing and counties ought to be in the business of preservation. And so if the question is with respect to where the line is ultimately drawn, I believe the floodplain ought to come out and stay in the county. And here's why. Fundamentally, the County of Sacramento has policies that relate to agricultural preservation, how you deal with pesticides, I mean, all the way down the line. Cities don't have those kind of policies, and why should we? And if we do, could you imagine the landowners that have multiple properties in different parts of the county, some in the city, some in the county, what if the policies are inconsistent? I just think it makes it really hard to do business, also that we can preserve land that we know is not going to be developed anyway. So I'm a strong advocate for keeping the floodplain out of the city.
Thank you very much. Mr. Sherry, please.
Well, yeah, let the county guy go last. Okay. I need clarification.
Please.
I thought I understood the question when it was asked, but over time I'm not sure I do. I'd like to hear it repeated, please.
Absolutely. The question is, the area south of Grantline is in the urban service boundary up to the high flood line. Who would you prefer to eventually develop this area, the city or the county?
Okay, thank you. So the question really is about development of the area south of Grantline Road and outside of the floodplain.
Yep.
And this is kind of an interesting response, and I hope my board member Don Natoli agrees with what I'm about to say. but this really kind of warrants a map. That the question isn't should this property develop or not. If it is to develop in urban uses, is it appropriate to be developed as an extension of the unincorporated county or as an extension of the city? And I think if you look at the map, there really is kind of an obvious answer. If the county were to be urbanizing this area, it'd be a peninsula of unincorporated county that would be developed. So I think Sacramento County is actually on record as saying that if this property area is to develop, it's appropriate that it be as an extension of the city.
Very well. Thank you very much. Does anyone else that needs clarification, sir?
Are you saying that it is appropriate to urbanize?
No, I didn't say that.
Thank you. Now, ma'am, if you'll go ahead and stand up and ask your question, we'd appreciate it.
During the course of the SOI amendment process, the city has shifted its rationale for including the floodplain. Initially, the staff said the inclusion was necessary to address the potential impacts of the SOI on a small number of landowners whose property would be divided into two jurisdictions, Elk Grove and the County of Sacramento. If the floodplain was left out of the SOI, more recently the city has argued that the floodplain should be included in the SOI in order to prevent development that could otherwise be approved by the county. Given this more recent rationale, my question is, what mechanisms would be the city used to protect the floodplain, and how do you explain the language in the city's current general plan cited in the SOI amendment that gives the city discretion to permit fill in the floodplain for land development by the city council?
Please, swing. Very good. Did you get that, Mr. Mason? Yes, that was your question, and your answer is coming.
Our city's general plan, I think, is very clear that we are committed to not developing in the floodplain. The SOI application includes the floodplain, as I mentioned previously, primarily because of the way the lot lines are laid out. A couple meetings ago, the city council directed staff to work with the county in developing some possible memorandum of understanding where we could deal with that common interest in protecting the floodplain. We're currently meeting with county staff to try to work out that understanding, and we hope to come back in October with the city council and board supervisors to see what progress we've made. But we're not committed one way or the other at this point. The council has asked us to work together with the county and see what we can agree to.
Very good. We have clarification on two levels here. Ma'am, would you please stand? Well, take your time, please.
I'm reading out of the application where you say page 4-25. The use of fill in the 100-year floodplain to create buildable area is strongly discouraged and shall be subject to the review to determine potential impacts on wildlife habitat and flooding and other parcels. And right below that, development fill may not be placed in the floodplain or subsequent except unless approved by the city and appropriate state and federal agencies. And there is a history of the city of filling land to reclaim land in the floodplain. And how do we know, I like clarification, how we would know that that wouldn't happen in this case?
Well, I can't speak for the city council, but I can be fairly certain that the draft MOU that moves forward will have very strong language that is committed to not developing in that floodplain. And if that means that we have to go back and revise the wording in that SOI application, that would be for the council to ultimately decide. But I think we have stronger policy language in place elsewhere, including our general plan.
This is the general plan I was reading
from. One moment. I can see a C pretty clearly with these glasses. Go ahead and put that C up, and I certainly will call on you. No one will be overlooked. Now, we do have two individuals, Mr. Hume first, and Mr. Burnett, who want to weigh in on this. Please, Mr. Hume.
First thing is, remove the language. Easy enough. I mean, if that is the stumbling block, is that there's language in there that permits any level of fill, get rid of it. If it's in the general plan, though, that's different than what's in the application. I thought the question was related to the application, not the general plan. So we can get back to a clarification, but let me get to the other part of your question, which is what kind of policies or what things can we do to ensure preservation? And those run the full gamut, starting with the MOU that's currently being discussed and coming underway of, you know, trying to figure out how the city and the county determine what is the appropriate use for that area and how that gets codified and saved for the long term. You have, obviously, conservation easements, agricultural easements, these types of things that can be put into place to file the title on that. You have, obviously, general plan designations. And then there is even a possibility of a JPA or some other conservancy or some other third party wherein these lands are entrusted to neither the city nor the county nor, you know, and somehow figured out how do we establish and really maintain the long-term viability and sustainability of this land.
Very good. Mr. Burness, please.
Yes, I think that there is a very practical reason why it's better served for the county to maintain control of the floodplain in this particular circumstance. And I'm recalling a project called Riverwalk, I think it was, that was actually in this area that we're talking about prior to incorporation. Floodplain lines can be fudged. Engineering surveys can be done in such a way that they suggest that the line is here and rather than there. And also, a little fill is always suggested as a way of kind of rounding things out and making it even. I think it's better to have the decision of how to move, of whether or not to move that floodplain out of, and not be on the table. Riverwalk was never approved. It never got to hearing. But it would have been a very interesting issue and a very controversial issue It's one that is best left off the table, I think, by having the county maintain control of the floodplain.
Thank you. Barbara, did you have a question, clarification? Some people I know by name, so I'll probably call it. If I don't, it's just a little old-timer setting in.
Regarding how the county handles the floodplain areas, I'm remembering what happened up on Sunrise with the development of a rather well-known family that moved dirt prior to having any permit. And I'm wondering how the county would stop that from happening again, regardless of who the family is.
Who would like to weigh in on that?
The question that I heard was, what would the county do to assure that we did not have an unauthorized fill in the floodplain? Is that correct? You know, I think it's important to note and keep in mind that the floodplain area we're talking about here really does constitute the county's urban service boundary. So the county does not contemplate development in the floodplain and never has. To that extent, there wouldn't be any particular interest served by doing that fill because we're not going to be allowing the development to occur. Now, the question more specifically is what happens if somebody does illegal fill? And I think whether it's in the city or the county, the best thing to do is if you see it happening, let us know so we can address it.
Thank you. We're going to change the rules a little bit. And I'm going to tell you what they are. The change is simple. We all can handle it. We're going to take these to 30-second answers. There are a lot of people in here who want a question and want clarification and want to weigh in. So we'll move the question and answer up 1 minute to 30 seconds. It depends. We're going to shuffle it a little bit. How does that sound to you? Is everybody amenable to that? And I'll tell you why. So more people can get in. And ma'am, you will get in as often as your card goes up. Sir, you want clarification. Please, go ahead.
How does the city define this USB or the dividing line between the developable and the non-developable right now? City has on their map, they give us a map right here, the map that shows some line. So how does the city define that, and is it possible for somebody to fudge that and dump dirt in there and change that line?
This would be for
the city, I guess, or the county, or whoever might have to.
The USB is a codified line.
It is a codified line that happened as a part of the county's general plan in 1993. So it exists, it is defined. In the case of east of Highway 99, it's basically the high water floodplain line. On the west side of 99, it's Cameron Road and Bilby Road. Important distinction, though, is that that was a county planning tool, the USB. So the fact of where the city determines its developable area is a whole different animal. And I don't want to get into the us versus them kind of mentality because I'm not putting any blame or anything like that. But if we're taking apples to apples and talking about the floodplain and filling the floodplain, all of Stone Lake...
You're going to have to come back to the rest of that answer because your time is up.
Oh,
30 seconds. 30
seconds.
30 seconds. One moment. He will come back. And the reason he will come back is because we have a lot of citizens who put their questions out also. We will come back to each and every question. We will get more clarification than you can handle. These members will have an opportunity. But if we get the questions from your views to them, they can answer them. You can get clarification. If we don't get these questions on the table, they don't know how you feel. We're going to find out how they feel. So let's go for this question. We're going to get clarification.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Clarification from you. Why are you stopping from answering this
Well, he respects that because we talked about the time and we have a timer up here who shows them the time. And people who are used to doing, excuse me, sir, one moment, please. When people are used to having a large group, we cannot distinguish between the time being appropriate for the panel. The time is appropriate for you. Let us get all the questions on the table, and then we can put up those cards as many times as we need to. Remember, we are principled people. We have a lot of passion, but I've got to get these questions up because the worst thing is not to. So one moment, please. If you have a question, someone will pick it up. The next question, and Mr. Q, he recognizes that. He'll come back to that. He's done that before. He's used to it. So are all of these members here. Mr. Wayne Gallup, would you please stand? Thank you, sir. Mr. Gallup has a question that's going on the table. According to recent informal polling, there is a very low level of support for the SOI amendment as currently written. El Grove is now a city of 140,000 people, many of whom are seeing their service needs cut back. Has the city considered charging back the cost of the SOI application to the small number of landowners who are the direct beneficiaries and the main proponents of the SOI expansion? This question is to Mr. Hume.
Did you make note of that? I wasn't talking yet.
Okay. My off-the-cuff answer is I would assume that some of the costs would be borne by the plan area. In other words, those fees would be built back in as a recovery agency for the cost of planning that area. I don't know if either the gentleman to my left here would like to weigh in on that, but that would be just my off-the-cuff thinking.
And it's interesting that question was raised because we are exploring that potential as we speak. We're looking to convene a meeting in the next week or two with staff people to explore those options of collecting that fee and placing the burden on the people that would benefit most from the SOI.
It looks like Mr. Shine actually has a clarification question, please.
For you.
Yes.
The question that you just read lasts 55 seconds. We give them 30 seconds to answer a 55-second question, multi-part.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's fair to the audience or to the panel to mm-hmm. force them into that.
Well,
I suggest that we take a look at lengthening that for the sake of maybe possibly not meeting and not being able to get to the rest of that stack. But at least we'll get some of them answered correctly.
Gotcha.
Without having a fragmented answer and nobody understands it.
Here's what's important. And I think all of you get it. Most of you get it. It is important to get these questions on the table. Once these questions are on the table, they can clarify for the rest of the evening. It's the CF, I want you to clarify on my question. And you say what that was. It's the other C, well, you say briefly, and then they clarify. The most important thing that citizens don't remember is if they don't know what you say, what you want, how you feel, they determine it for you. This is about getting these on the record, and when their decisions are made, they make those decisions based on your input. This is your city, these are your employees. And so, therefore, I want to get your questions on the table. They will come back. They're a very intelligent group. They'll come back. You'll have more time for your seeds to go up. And that's the important thing. I cannot leave one stone unturned on a citizen who put in a question. Please bear with us. Let's go. Steve Detrick or Jerry Davis. According to materials provided by the City of Elk Grove during listening sessions, it is the purpose of the SOI to define the primary area where urban development is encouraged. Given that, a key dispute over Elk Grove's SOI application is urban development within the existing Consumers River, Deer Creek floodplain, could you please explain how an irreversible act of government that encourages urban development is going to be used to prevent future urban development within the floodplain? Mr. Detrick, and then Mr. Davis.
In my understanding, one of the methods would be is to put an easement on top of it. If you put a conservatory easement, that would never be able to be built on.
Mr. Davis.
First of all, I already kind of answered this question, but first of all, I fundamentally believe and have reached the conclusion that the floodplain needs to come out of the sphere of influence application. I think that's the best way to deal with that. Secondly, as far as any kind of preservation permanently, you have to, look, and I say this respectfully to my elected officials up here, and even looking at myself in the mirror, but you know what, if you want to preserve land indefinitely, you got to take it out of the hands of politicians, and you got to put it into a third party's hands, and that's the only way that we're going to preserve land in the long run. But the initial step, I believe, and the best way to approach it would be to move the city's SOI application boundary.
Thank you. The clarification, please.
My understanding, the RFP is already in LAFCO's hands, and they're getting the results already, is that true?
Yep. That's correct. LAFCO's in the process of finalizing the RFP to hire an environmental consultant. The environmental study will be done based on the application. The issue of the floodplain, whether it's in or out of the SOI, shouldn't affect the outcome of that environmental assessment.
We have another question from Wayne Gallup. I'm taking the questions as received. What does the county to be... It's a little bit off the mark, but we'll read it anyway and clarify your... question. What does the county to be an acceptable population density ratio of people per acre for planning purposes? Based on the information presented in Elk Grove's SOI amendment application, does the county believe that Elk Grove needs more land to accommodate expected growth through 2035 as projected by SACOG? Mr. Sherry?
Start the clock now. That's probably a question better asked of the city of Elk Grove. The county is really not in the growth business in the South County. I think that's really a question more directly posed to those who are looking at expanding the SOI.
Okay. This one is for Mr. Pat Hume. In considering expansion of the city limits, do you believe that the policies of this city council have reflected the land use policies citizens within the final EIR of the general plan? For example, it looks like LU19, LU20, and LU30, land use 19, 20, and 30.
It's been so long since I worked on the general plan, I don't recall exactly which LU 19, 20, and 30 were, but I will say that yes, the land use map of the general plan does call out for this area to have future study for urbanization. To go back to the previous question, though, I think that there's two assumptions that I fundamentally don't agree with, to use Gary's term, and that is one, that we should be developing at an acreage of 8 to 10 units per acre across the board in every scenario, and the second, that we should be using 2035 numbers. Again, that's 25 years from next year. That is not a long enough lens, in my estimation. You should be looking 50 to 100 years in the future.
Thank you. Now, this question comes from Tom Russell. Tom, let's stand up. Tom Russell says it may be questionable as to whether the city can afford itself if it stopped growth. The question is, if the city needs to grow in order to sustain itself, just how much growth each year is needed? This is for anyone who would elect to answer that question.
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
I guess the way I'll answer that is we have
got to change the way we're going to grow. We do not have a sustainable model. Look, I mean, the way, and it's in Elk Grove, it's every suburban community across the country. You big boxes go in, rooftops go in, we overextend ourselves, we eat up way too much land, and it's not sustainable because the bubble bursts. So, I believe that we have to move forward in the SOI process because we are locked into a scenario where we have 140,000 people and less than 30,000 jobs. That's not good policy, right? We need to grow our job space significantly, but I'm going to challenge folks to grow differently, and we're going to have to do that. And that means
everything. Yes, I have a question of you, Mr. Davis. When you say sustainability, what do you mean by that? How do you trying to make this cookie cutter all the way up in a whole regional where the whole thing is
exactly the same with the densities of the same. What would be ideal? What do you mean by sustainability? Sustainability to whom? And to what interests? To the interests of the residents? To the interests of developers? The property owners? The environmental movement? What do you mean by sustainability and density relationship to that?
All of the above. I actually have a proposal I'll be happy to hand out tonight that is the Strong and Sustainable Elk Grove Initiative that I'm going to begin to push forward, that's focused on sustainability. And what, to me, that means a lot of things, because there are a lot of people involved in it. It means, I believe part of that, I've laid it out here, I'll read through it fast, so we've got 30 seconds, but a strong jobs to housing balance. And as we move forward, there needs to be at least a job and a half for every home that goes in. Those need to be quality jobs, right? Those need to be quality jobs that match the income level of the level of the home, you know, affordability of the home that we're building. It's higher density, it's mixed use, higher density in the appropriate places. We've got to grow differently. It's being creative about reducing vehicle miles travel. Okay, I'll stop. I'll have Miss Elliott.
Well, we've got Mr. Blackhawk, who wants to weigh in on this, Mr. Sarfetti, and we have Mr. May, and I believe. Did you have your card up?
No, not on this one.
Okay. Please. And Mr. Watson.
Well, I think Councilmember Davis responded well in that the creation of jobs is one of the policy interests that is driving the FOI. And I wanted to clarify that it isn't an assumption that there is a certain amount of fiscal growth or budgetary growth that's needed that is a justification for the FOI. It is looking at the general plan, looking at how the general plan envisions the potential for regional growth, and that regional growth may be focused south of Elk Grove, an interest that is shared by the SACOC blueprint, which also envisions growth south of Elk Grove, and the county general plan, which also envisions growth south of Elk Grove through the USB East 99 area that we talked about earlier. And so you have these shared planning elements, each of which describe growth somewhere south of Elk Grove, and for that reason, there is an interest by the city council in identifying those areas as an urban study area, and the SOI is a natural extension of that.
Yes, thank you. And Mr. Sosnicki?
Let me just, is this on? Let me just add some facts to the discussion. Elk Grove has a population of 141,000, approximately 430 people. But within the city limits, there are 19,005 jobs. And if you take a look at that, there's approximately 2.49 housing units per job. This is extremely out of balance. In Sacramento, the ratio between houses and jobs is 0.87 to 1. And so we need to do something to change this imbalance.
Thank you very much. See how this works? It's working perfectly. I want to introduce a few people who have come in. Mr. Davis came in earlier. He's going to give us, at the end, he will give us a bit of a presentation on who he is, why he is, and what he's come to deliver to you. We have Mr. Don Natoli, Supervisor of the County of Sacramento. Mr. Terry Shutton, who has come in, the County Executive for the County of Sacramento. And Paul Hahn, Administrator of Municipal Services Agency, County of Sacramento. Welcome, welcome. Okay, the ball is rolling. I have a person who had their hand up a while back. She didn't have a C, but that's okay. But I think she had a question.
Yes, but did you have a question earlier?
I was wondering what he wanted to say in response to that last question.
Okay. Mr. Wasserman?
I'm trying to weigh an opinion about growth, and to kind of echo what Gary had said. You know, there's a difference between just unbridled growth and sustainable type of growth. And I think it sometimes can be reflected in property values. I mean, as citizens of Elk Grove, you know, I went and looked some stuff up. In 05, your median home price was $460. In the city of Davis, it was $580. Currently, your median home price is $234,000. A 60% decrease. The city of Davis went down to 439, a 20% decrease. So, you know, not necessarily, you know, expanding your boundaries is not always what's best for the city. You can move to a place like Davis that takes a different type of an approach, and that's something even to think about, even the sphere of influence and whether it's necessary to expand them.
Very good. Yes, Mr. Burness, would you like to weigh in?
Yes, I think that
Sustainability is a very important thing. There are good examples around the region. I think that Elk Grove needs to demonstrate the ability to provide that within their existing area before they consider expanding outward.
Thank you. Now we have another question from Darian Haynes. Darian? Darian asks, what is the sphere of influence and what does it do for our economy? We want two people to raise their hand, and one from the city and one from the county, maybe three, and one from the citizenry. So, county?
The sphere of influence is really a mechanism used by the Local Agency Information Commission to determine the ground rules for cities to expand.
Very good. Sir, would you like to go ahead and expand on that?
Sure, and just to kind of dovetail with that, it's also a way to logically plan for the future growth, and not just for the city, but the service providers, the utility companies, the other special districts, and to get everyone to the table to think about how we can make that transition. And just clarification on the SOI, the SOI doesn't authorize growth per se. And so back to the Davis example, the SOI establishes the ultimate boundary, but it's the rate of annexation that actually establishes your growth pattern. And so following the SOI adoption, there's pre-planning and then there's the decisions that's made on an individual basis as to whether annexation is justified or not.
Okay. Sir, Mr. Burnett.
The SOI also serves as a very important means of stabilizing prices outside of the line. But one of the main functions of it was to try to reduce rampant speculation. And every time we contemplate changing the urban service boundary, it increases the amount of speculative land purchases and makes it difficult for farmers to stay in business.
We have another question from Nancy Chairs. Nancy? Nancy, would you just stand up so everybody can see you and they see you in the community again and know you asked this question. What are the benefits for Elk Grove residents of including the Consumas River floodplain corridor in the SOI? And what are the drawbacks of not doing so? This question goes to Patrick Blacklock.
One of the interests in including that from a citywide perspective is that it allows the city to have some control in terms of what that future area looks like. And one of the things that has impressed me, having gone through listening sessions, is that there seems to be a common interest out there in preserving the floodplain and seeing that remain undeveloped. That's an interest the city council shares. And as a result, by including it in the SOI, it gives them confidence that they can be part of charting that vision in the future.
Mr. Hume, did you want to weigh in on this one?
I'll just add that, again, there is a distinction, and I know that's maybe different from some of the paperwork of some of the LAFCO policies, but I have in my mind a distinction between inclusion in the sphere of influence and annexation. And development cannot happen until annexation happens. Inclusion in the sphere of influence basically gives the residents of Elk Grove, via their city government, a seat at the table when land use decisions are being made. And so ultimately, what I look at it as the benefit there is simply to have the discussion. Have the discussion about what do we want to happen with that land, have the discussion about what we don't want to happen with that land, and then have the discussion on how do we get to our common goals.
Very good. We need some clarification here.
I'd like to know, in that regard, where your little walkway goes through, having people down in the habitat to mess up the critters' environment.
I think, again, that's part of the discussion. I mean, I don't have any set plans. It may be outside the floodplain. It may have bits that go down into the, but there, you know, and maybe actually Mr. Mann might be better to speak at that. There is some beautiful land down in there that I think if there were opportunities to open it up, people would have a greater appreciation for what we're really trying to conserve.
Mr. Mann, did you want to weigh in on that one?
Yes, you know, floodplain has uses other than farming. Certainly, our primary concern right now is the farming aspect of it. But we foresee in the future that this floodplain is going to be used as a recharge area, which I think is going to be vital to the entire community. I think it's the Consumas River, when I was a boy, used to run all year round. It doesn't run all year round. But hopefully, we're going to be able to get more water to service our community through that. We're interested in taking different steps, perhaps, to encourage use of the floodplain by the community to a greater extent than it's been in the past. We think that the designing the floodplain in conjunction with the other land is going to be an advantage.
Thank you. Now we have a question for Don Hazen. We do not know the writer of this question, but if you'd like to stand up, please do. How can the city of Elk Grove justify the sphere of influence expansion, considering the undeveloped acreage currently within the city's SOI, budgetary constraints of the city, overall economic housing downturn, and vacancy and or foreclosure rate inside the city limits? And for transparency's sake, what is the current vacancy and foreclosure rate?
The last question first, I don't have that data, but I can say, generally speaking, I think the wisdom of the city council is that they anticipate future growth and that really this is the best time to plan for the future. While we're in a recession and there isn't any strong development pressure, this is the best time to plan for the future. There's not a time frame that I don't think the city council said to staff, we want you to anticipate what our land needs are by a certain year. They just said plan for the ultimate boundaries of the city, and so that's what we've done. We're not saying that we're not going to continue to encourage infill development and do sustainable development within our city limits, but saved by the red,
but you can always comment on that later. We've got a question for Patrick Hume. Again, these questions are read in the order of receipt. What is your vision of sustainability, both generally in terms of the greater Northern California region and specifically for Elk Grove?
That's obviously a bigger question than I can answer tonight. Generally, I would say sustainability means not overtaxing the ability of the natural environment to support basically the human existence. That would be a very general question. How do we get there and what does it look like is a much different issue. With respect to this specific issue, I've brought up a couple of ideas as far as using a more natural drainage environment rather than conveyed cement, either through piping or through drainage where we're trying to convey the water away, to use natural swales, constructed wetlands, things of this nature that actually try and create a better groundwater recharge and better percolation, and then, you know, not using a regular water for irrigation, to use maybe a cistern type of
thing. Thank you.
So,
again, you'll be able to clarify later. You can come back to that. He'll come back to that like all of us will come back to that. This is a tough thing because we don't do it in an orderly fashion when we're in our town halls. We just got to learn how to do that so we can get it all out. We're going to get it all out. Thank you, Mr. Hume. I appreciate you. Rob Sherry. This is from Jerry. Jerry, if you'd stand up. Does the county have sufficient resources, monetary, to support public access to the Consumas River corridor?
Clock doesn't start until I start talking, right? Interesting question. At this point, the county isn't proposing public access to Consumas River, so I don't know that we've contemplated that question.
Anyone want clarification? Okay. How are we doing so far? What kind of town halls do you folks like?
Louder.
Say that again?
Louder.
Louder?
Loud
ones. Yeah. Well, we're going to try to keep, we're going to let you get loud in a minute. Because we got to get all these questions on the table, we're going to let you get loud in a minute. How are you doing? You have something you want to ask them?
No, they should have a little more time to respond. That's all I can say.
They'll get more time. Trust me, they'll get more time. Who doesn't want their question read? Please raise your hand. For those who have given me a question, who does not want their question read? What is your question? What is your name? What is your name? Oh, you want to? Go ahead.
Here you go. You'll have five and ask a question. Which is your name?
My name is Sean.
Okay, Sean. I need that back.
Put in order of receipt. Jim Perham. And he wants panel and audience to participate on this. By show of hands, how many here are property owners or represent in the proposed area of the sphere of influence? How many here are property owners? Okay. Number two, how many are county or city employees or paid consultants of the county or city? Of you who are property owners and county employees, please stand up if you fit both bills. Okay. How many are members of representatives of groups that oppose the sphere of influence and annexation? So, Jim, did that help you? Did you get some statistics that you needed? Does anybody not want their question read? The next question comes from Doug Williams. This is for anyone. If the city removed the Consumers River floodplain from the SOI application, how would the county fund maintenance, control, and services of this area? And how could the city fund habitat restoration or any other non-development improvements? Mike Witt. Two questions. For, right, I read them both. There are two questions, again, anyone can answer them. The first one, if the city removed the Consumers River floodplain, so they can answer whichever one of the two they want, or both. And if you want to answer one in 30 seconds and come back, a clarification for the second one, please do. If the city removed the Consumers River floodplain from the sphere of influence, how would the county fund maintenance, control, and services of this area? Question number one. Question number two, how could the city fund habitat restoration or any other non-development improvements? Right, sir?
Marsha, I'm going to go for question number two. You know, whether it's the city or the county, as I mentioned in my introductory comments, we're both partnering on a habitat conservation plan, and the intent there is, I can't explain it in 30 seconds, but the intent there is to have a mechanism for mitigating for impacts to habitat as growth occurs. So I think whether it's the city or the county, that mechanism is going to be available for protection of habitat and floodplains.
Well, I'll just add on to that that if for the either agency, obviously mitigation fees would be collected that then would be used to pay for habitat conservation and easements and that sort of thing. And that's current law.
Clarification.
Would be collected. When you say, Mr. Mayor, when you say collected, does that mean collected from property owners as a fee? Or in future development, or what?
It would be future development.
Yeah, under.
I'm sorry, I just want to understand this. So if it's from future development, how does the county get those funds? So this is not the county getting those funds. This is if the city.
Provide a little bit of clarification of that, and that is that the Habitat Conservation Plan that was mentioned earlier would have an entity that would be implementing it, and that implementing entity that would use those fees to implement what the improvements that are in the HCP that are funded by the mitigation fees that development pays as it develops.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One moment for our clarification. I have people in the audience that would prefer to go back to the one minute question, one minute answer. Remember, that's going to alleviate some of these people.
Are you going to go back to the questions that only got 30?
Remember, when people weigh in, they have the same time as the other person. So if we have one person with a question and five or six people wanting to weigh in, then we miss people. What would you prefer?
Keep it going.
8:30. We have about 20 questions still.
What about answering or asking the question together and then...
That's what the proposal is.
On the table and people can respond.
Exactly. That is exactly what the proposal is. Is there anyone who wants not to have their question read? Okay, we will continue. Is the planning department of any other entity studying the predicted change in the floodplain due to climate change, such as larger runoff amounts, more frequent precipitation events, sea level rise, affecting the delta, etc. This is a serious issue and should be addressed in any SOI expansion. This was addressed to Mr. Pat Blacklock.
This is one of the issues that arose during the listening session and would fully expect it to be among many that would be considered as part of the environmental review process that Planning Director Hazen mentioned earlier will be, LAFCO will be initiating to move forward with the SOI application. There hasn't currently been an analysis that I'm aware of related to that. Don Hazen may clarify.
And concurrent with that effort, we are looking at just an overall citywide climate change action plan and sustainability element of our general plan, which is what the council had also asked us to pursue. So that's happening on a broader scale as well.
Thank you. We have a question for Mr. Rob Burness. It says, at a recent council meeting, Vice Mayor Sherman specifically mentioned that the city intends to use the floodplain for mitigation of future developments in the city. How will this affect the South Sacramento Habitat Conservation Plan? Do you think this is an appropriate use of the floodplain? If it is, include it in the SOI amendment.
The floodplain of the Cosumnes River includes much habitat that would not be mitigatable for the land that would be developed and the species that would be protected under ACP. So I don't see that there's a great deal of relevance to mitigation under ATP of Cosumnes River floodplain land. There's not a lot of riparian land that will be developed, and that's mostly a critical habitat of the Cosumnes River floodplain.
Thank you. Barbara Lamar writes, what does the panel see this adjacent area being zoned, whether it is left county or does it come under the influence of the city? It is for the panel, any member.
Adjacent area being the flood, or excuse me, where's my thing? Adjacent area being the floodplain? Is that what you meant by that question?
Barbara?
No, it's the portion that would be buildable in the sphere of influence.
Well, the SOI process does not include pre-planning, and that's really at the request of LAFCO. So at this point, it's premature for us to start to look at actual land uses. That would be the next step in the process after the SOI boundary is established. And that's a very extensive public process as well.
Mr. Sherry wants to weigh in.
Similarly, the county has not done detailed planning for this area either. It was inside our urban services boundary before the city of Elk Grove incorporated. I think, as I said earlier, if this is going to be developed in an urban way, it makes sense for it to be in the city. I think if it were in the county, we're probably looking at, this is a very general statement, probably a lower density kind of development than you'd see in the city.
Thank you. Mr. Burness.
I misspoke a little bit there. There is swings and hawk habitat in the Cosumnes River floodplain that is relatively significant, and that would be land that could be mitigated by development within the ACP development area. So yes, there is opportunities to mitigate under the ACP within the floodplain.
Thank you. Mr. Hume?
I just wanted to kind of tack on to what Don said, that I find that problematic, that I think the fact that there is no pre-planning in all of this, whether it's a LAFCO policy, city policy, county policy, whatever, to me that just creates the mystery. It doesn't put the light of day on what are we talking about. And so, you know, I mean, I've kind of shared what I think, that if we could all come around and say this is what we're looking at, that either has buy-in or now you know what you're really opposed with. And that a lot of that goes back with the issue about the floodplain. When you have that designated as a do not build zone, I think there's some comfort there. But when it's all just sort of these real nefarious planning things and little steps here and there, nobody ever gets to really have the full picture of what we're talking about.
The next one to clarify that would be Mr. Detrick and then Mr. Davis.
Yeah, I have to agree with Mayor Hume. One of the issues that has been troublesome is that we haven't had a market study done yet. And once that market study done, it'll give us a lot better idea what, if anything, the city needs. So I look forward to that being done as soon as possible.
Mr. Davis?
Yes, you know, what we do know is that
our jobs housing imbalance is not healthy for not just Elk Grove but the Sacramento region. So the reason, from my perspective, this process is moving forward is because we have got to be very aggressive about locating a high number, 50, 60,000 high quality jobs within our city so that our residents don't have to leave and get on the car. Get in their car. Having said that, that's also what I'm also frustrated with the process. You know, we've just been kind of moving on in generalities and talking about where we want to go in general. And, you know, that's from a city where I believe we've worked very, very hard to earn the trust of our residents in neighboring jurisdictions. I also believe that we've got a ways to go, which is why I'm proposing the sustainability plan. I can talk more about it later, but I'd like to start a discussion and get the council to at least embrace a series of guiding principles that will feed into this process as it moves further down the road.
Bruce Kennedy writes this question. Bruce, you want to stand up? This is for Rob Burness. Which Elk Grove planning and development issues are of most concern to supporters of the Stone Lakes National Wildlife Refuge?
The primary concern, I think, is the runoff that would be generated from additional urban development into the refuge. The refuge would be increasingly surrounded by urban development with the additional expansion, and we're very concerned about the potential impacts on the wildlife and the water quality in the area as a result of that additional urban development.
John, before you answer
your
question, is there a patient here?
With regard to runoff from urban development, isn't it true that currently the agricultural activities put far more silt and dirt into the water than would be the case after appropriate stormwater prevention? It's just not just the water quality, it's also the amount and the timing of the flood flows that greatly changes when you reduce you increase the pervious surfaces. And then you get a different kind of runoff with a lot more chemicals from the urban environment. There are impacts associated with agricultural runoff, but I think the urban runoff is a particular concern.
Okay. Sean?
I can speak quite loudly. I have a
two-pronged
question. The first part of it is, for the 8,000 undeveloped acres already in the USB, is that not adequate to produce the structure for the job that we need? This is directed particularly to Dr. Wassmer and Steve Sarnecki. Second part of that question is, if that's the logical issue, houses to jobs, isn't every additional house going in the opposite direction to that? Given that, what about the actual cost? We spoke earlier, Mr. Hume spoke earlier, about the beneficiaries picking up some of the costs of this process. Well, Dr. Wassmer has already mentioned the costs that were borne or going to be borne potentially by the citizens of Elk Grove given this increased expansion. These costs would be mostly the property values due to potentially overexpanding, costs due to congestion, costs due to loss of open space, possibly due to the open space and property values, diminishment of quality of life, and the amorphous costs that result in desirability of properties. The cost of water, because we're over-drawing our water, and the diminishment of water resources. I'm particularly interested in Dr.
Wassmer
and Steve Sarnecki.
Dr. Wassmer, please.
Well, that's my answer. I mean, I agree with much of what you said. I think, you know, the issue with regard to the whole sphere of influence, that hasn't been discussed. I think it's been assumed to be a given that we're going to expand the sphere of influence. You know, I would much more think about not expanding the sphere of influence. You know, if I had a vice at LAFCO, I would think about not approving it at all, just because I think the county would be more likely to protect, as was mentioned here, that you're not to develop that area. They don't see that as an urban development point. But I think you're exactly right in regard to, you know, the one thing that economists can talk about is supply and demand. Right, and there isn't a whole lot of demand for Elk Grove houses right now. Last I read, you had one of the highest foreclosure rates, one of the highest drop in property values in the entire country, kind of a poster child for what went wrong in the last 4 or 5 years. You know, that has to come back. You need more people wanting to buy the existing homes. Why build new homes? You know, I can see Gary's proposal for sustainable development, but I think those jobs can be put within the existing city limits and not need to go elsewhere in the new area.
Mr. Sarnicki?
How the area is developed is ultimately a policy decision that's going to be made by the policymakers. From an economic development perspective, right now we have a lot of opportunity for infill projects within the limits of the city, but we really don't have any acreage or property available for large-scale development. And there is a preference within the development community to be able to come into a community and have large lots, properties that are shovel-ready, and we just don't have those within the community to the extent that we need to in order to be competitive with other communities in terms of attracting large-scale employers to Elk Grove.
Thank you. We have clarification. Go ahead, Sean.
That's even given the 8,000 undeveloped acres? That's a lot of space.
Yeah, those are scattered in small lots. We have 5-acre parcels, maybe 20-acre parcels, but we don't have, well, we really don't have 200-acre parcels that can be developed as one unit.
We have a clarification here.
Yes, this is directed for Mr. Nguyen. As a builder, how do you see this? How do you respond to this question?
Thank you. Actually, it reminds me of debates. I remember in Elk Grove in 1999 and 2000 when the city was first incorporating and concerns about property values going down and down because the city had a generally pro-growth attitude. Look what's happened. I mean, if you step back from the map, and a lot of this depends on how closely your nose is to the map, this SOI area or the region, or even the blueprint, and give yourself the benefit of time, you know, going out beyond 2035, Sacramento will grow by 1 million people. They have to be housed somewhere, even in medium and high density arrangements, and they should be living near their workplaces to the extent they can be. The 8,000 acres in the city today, I agree, it's undeveloped generally for a reason. And I don't mean to be sarcastic or cynical, but usually a vacant parcel is vacant for a reason. Neighborhood opposition to development, infrastructure, incapacity, or the like.
Hi. Actually, the city is sitting on about 400 acres right now. 100 plus acres of the defunct Elk Grove Promenade is sitting there shovel-ready, as well as the additional 250 acres across the street that is sitting there shovel-ready, as well as another 100 plus acres as part of the Sterling development. So I firmly disagree that the large acreages that are shovel-ready are split all around the city and the county, and that we can't get this together to bring in a large-scale employer.
We have a gentleman over in the back. I'm going to walk over. He needs clarification or would like to ask a question. Does anybody want to give up their question? Okay.
As said earlier, there's 8,000 acres within the city limit that are undeveloped and could be developed. Now, the city says that, when we approve the SOI, it's for long-term planning only. But we all know that the minute the SOI is approved, or very shortly thereafter, there will be applications from landowners and developers within the SOI for annexation and development. That's happened in virtually every area where there have been SOIs. Will the city approve applications for annexation and development within the SOI area while there is land remaining with the city that is undeveloped but could be developed? And if so, wouldn't the applications for development in the SOI area be competing with development within the current city limit? I'll address this to Mayor Hume. I'm sorry I didn't say that up front.
That was an awfully long question, so I apologize for my short response in my 30 seconds, but my general answer would be is that obviously it depends on the project, depends on the use, and depends on what we're talking about. Are we talking about bringing in large swaths of land for more development where there's vacant acreage in the city that needs to be absorbed? No. If there was a certain type of project or a certain office campus development that were coming through, or a university that said this is where we want to locate, maybe that would be considered in the short term. But you have to consider that this is a 10 to 20 year process just of getting from through the SOI process and then back to the mall. That's, you know, we're talking a lot about existing conditions when I'm talking about long-term planning. So you're going to hamstring yourself in the future off of what exists today.
Mr. Burnett?
Yes, I'd like to comment a little bit about the last four or five questions where there's this presumption that there's going to be some sort of large influx of new jobs in Elk Grove. I'm sorry, it just ain't going to happen. Elk Grove is at the very southwest corner of the urban area. That's not where most jobs develop. You can point to places all over the area. Laguna was an area that 1,000 acres rezoned for jobs. And some of it happened, but at least half of that went back. In the Folsom sphere of influence, originally it was going to be mostly jobs. Now there's only 400 acres of commercial and jobs, and that won't even all happen. So I think jobs is something that everybody puts on the table, but the reality is it's just not going to happen.
I believe that Mr. Dickens has part of the way in, and then Mr. Gates again, and then this young lady has a question.
You know, we've been working pretty hard to try to bring jobs to Elk Grove. We have 12,000 people who commute for the state every day up to Sacramento. Before the Senate committee, we just had a bill passed, I believe it's AG 1006, that Councilman Davis and I have been spending a lot of time working on with the support of the rest of our council. You know, we didn't get here in a short period of time. These things take time to turn around. You know, the Elk Grove is a much more affordable place for commercial development for the state to come down, so we're continually to work on that.
Yeah, if you don't zone and plan for jobs, they're not going to come. I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, I believe that, I mean, part of the reason I ran for the council was that I believe that there was a lot of zoning for jobs under this previous city, well, this city and the county before that were rezoned to residential that shouldn't have been. That's part of the reason I decided to run for council was to hold the line on some of those decisions, because you can't let just the current market determine your land use at all the time. You've got to plan for what's important for the community, and if jobs are important for the community, you've got to plan for them, you've got to zone for them, and you've got to do whatever you can to get them into the community. This is a long-term view that we're looking at, and in the next 4 or 5 years, are we going to get 50,000 jobs? No. But over the next 30, 40, 50 years, will we get 50 to 60,000 jobs? Yes, if we plan for it.
I thought this question is for Mr. Hayes, and I could understand that there might not be adequate land within the city for even vacant land that would be appropriate for all commercial development that might occur. But my question relates to residential development. In your sphere of influence application, you say that currently we have about 136,000 people living in Elk Grove with about 17,500 vacant total acres, in residential. That's about 8 people per acre. In the future, what you say the need is about 41,000 new residents, you estimate, and about 14,000 new acres. That comes to about 3 residents per acre. That's a decrease in the density of about close to threefold. And it is astounding to me that would be proposed, and I would like to know why you would want to decrease the density when the blueprint and all trends nationally are to increasing density. Median density residential is about 8 to 10 units per acre. That's about 25 people per acre, not about 3 people per acre.
Thank you for the question. I think one of the key components of doing any long-range planning is to continually test your assumptions. We continue to go over projections. We know SACOG is doing the same with their blueprint projections. And we are continuing to look at our numbers. And we have, it's been referenced many times about the market study. We are combining with the private sector to fund a market study, which will help give us that added piece of information to help plan for the future. And so you may very well find that those numbers need to be revised.